You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar. There are many strategies for mitigating the effects of climate change. Most of them involve finding ways to reduce or eliminate the use of fossil fuels. But what if that's not enough or can't be achieved? Can science geoengineer the planet to reduce carbon? A new study from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine says geoengineering should at least be investigated. Joining us is Dr. Scott Doney. He is the inaugural Joe D. and Helen J. Kingston Professor in Environmental Change at the University of Virginia, and he led this study. Dr. Doney, welcome to the program. First of all, let's start with geoengineering. What is geoengineering?
Geoengineering gets used in different ways. Typically, I think of geoengineering as attempts to actually change the climate directly by, for example, putting aerosols into the stratosphere to cool the planet. And that can mask the climate change problem driven by the high levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Our study was really looking more at, could we remove the problem by lowering the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere? So whether you want to call that carbon dioxide removal or a form of geoengineering is perhaps, you know, wordsmithing a bit, but often the geoengineering is a very different type of approach than what we were talking about in our study.
Okay, so I was just about to say that I get the sense that you're not exactly in love with the term geoengineering.
Well, You know, the Academy's published a report about half a decade ago where they talked about both solar radiation management, for want of a better term, or sometimes it's called climate intervention, and then a companion report looked at carbon dioxide removal. One of my friends likes to describe it as, you know, we have been putting a lot of carbon dioxide and other heat-trapping gases like methane into the atmosphere. And it's a lot like dumping trash into the alley behind your restaurant. And what we need to do is clean up that mess. So we need to slow how much carbon dioxide we're emitting to the atmosphere, and perhaps we could consider removing some that's already there. The solar radiation management might get rid of some of the consequences of that elevated carbon dioxide, you know, cover up some of the climate effects, but it would be a short-term activity. So my friend likes to describe it as using, you know, perfume to cover up the smell of the rotting garbage in the alley, where what we really need to do is clean up the garbage that's in the alley.
And we'll talk more about that in just a moment, but let's provide some context. What was the purpose or the goal of the research that you did?
So the Academy's working with the sponsor, in this case, the sponsor was the ClimateWorks Foundation, brings together a group of scholars. In this case, we had scholars from the natural sciences, social sciences, legal, policy, and engineering to look to see if we could outline a research strategy. So our goal wasn't to say we should do ocean-based carbon dioxide removal or we shouldn't do it. It was, do we have enough information for society to make informed decisions? And what we determined was that there's a considerable amount of research that would really inform whether we wanted to go down this road in, say, a decade or two decades as we try to deal with the overall climate problem. You know, the first priority, of course, is to reduce our emissions. So those are emissions abatements. Those are things like switching to renewable energy, energy efficiency approaches. Can we get the same economic and social benefits from activities without using as much energy? But many studies have suggested that, particularly if we want to reach some of the climate goals like the Paris Agreement, we may need these additional approaches that would actually remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, not simply reduce our emissions to the atmosphere.
You said a decade or two down the road. When do we reach a point when we do have to do something differently, like is being suggested?
All the studies that I've seen indicate that we need to start reducing emissions now. And in fact, the earlier and the more aggressive we start reducing emissions from power plants, from vehicles, from buildings, the better off we'll be. You know, the less climate change we'll have in the future, and the slower the rate that we'll experience that climate change. I was referring to the sort of decade or two in the future is that many of the studies that were trying to target the goal of the climate agreement from the Paris process suggested that those emissions abatements couldn't occur rapidly enough, and that there was some residual emissions, things like, you know, international aviation and marine shipping across, you know, across oceans, some of the agricultural emissions of methane and nitrous oxide, some other heat trapping gases are really hard to mitigate or to abate. And that sometime before mid-century, we would need to consider rolling out some of these carbon dioxide removal approaches.
So I'm sure our audience is very curious as to what, this was a 300-page report.
Yes.
What are a few of the suggestions or the possibilities in ways in which the ocean can be altered that would have an impact on climate?
Yeah, broadly, it kind of groups into a couple of areas. One area is has to do with ocean chemistry. Right now, humans are emitting about 10 billion tons of carbon to the atmosphere every year. So about 35 billion tons of carbon dioxide. About a quarter of that carbon dioxide is naturally removed into the ocean. The ocean's relatively alkaline. It's a large volume. So some of that extra carbon dioxide is just taken up through simple physical chemical processes. You know, higher pressure in the atmosphere, carbon dioxide dissolves into the surface ocean and then is advected into the ocean interior. Potentially, if you increase the alkalinity of the surface ocean, that would allow that same process to occur, but at an amplified rate. So that would be either through grinding up alkaline rocks and adding them to the ocean. There are electrochemical approaches where you would split water and then use that to make the ocean more alkaline. There's even electrochemical approaches where you'd actually strip carbon dioxide out of the ocean and then store it somewhere else.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, you finish.
Okay. The other approaches are more tapping into ocean biology. So just like plants on land, phytoplankton in the ocean, when they photosynthesize, they remove carbon dioxide from the surface ocean. And if that occurs for long enough, that carbon dioxide then gets replaced from the gas exchange from the atmosphere. And so in the natural state, the ocean holds a lot of carbon dioxide, in part because it's quite alkaline, but also because the biology pumps some of the organic carbon from the surface ocean into the deep sea. And so approaches have been suggested, such as adding nutrients or such as nitrogen or phosphorus or iron, which is a micronutrient for plankton, that would increase phytoplankton blooms. Other approaches would be to grow macroalgae, things like kelp, and then sink the kelp down into the deep sea, restoring marine ecosystems that have been damaged by overfishing or whaling in the past, could also potentially increase these biological mechanisms that occur in the ocean for storing carbon in the deep sea.
There are so many anecdotes around this, but you mentioned fishing and whaling. I understand that one of the things that has been brought up, and I don't know if it was in relationship to your study or not, is that if certain species of whales were restored, that could help because just the size of their bodies and when they get rid of their waste and when they die off, that it, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so we did look at among a whole variety of these ecosystem recovery approaches. We did look at the impact of past whaling. So industrial scale whaling reduced humpback whale and also some of the fin whales, blue whales. These are the baleen whales that open their mouth and basically ingest large amounts of plankton and then filter that plankton out. And so, as you mentioned, there is the issue of, they have they disappeared from the ecosystem. There was an amount of carbon stored in their body mass, and then they also act to process a lot of plankton. Some of that ends up in the deep sea if the whale were to die and sink to the bottom of the ocean. Some of that can be transported through their fecal material. They also process, in addition to carbon, they process nutrients, things like nitrogen, phosphorus, and iron. There are already efforts worldwide to protect marine mammals and whales, and particularly some of the baleen whales that I work some in the Antarctic with part of my research, and there's been a pretty spectacular recovery in parts of the world of many of the humpback whale populations, but we're not seeing a similar recovery for some of the other baleen whales. Certainly, I think this is something that needs to be studied. What is the impact on carbon cycling in the ocean as these whales recovery, as these whale populations recover? And that was one thing that we recommended that, since there's already a lot of science underway studying the conservation of whales, could we add work on the carbon cycling impacts? It's not always as obvious that simply recovering an ecosystem would necessarily store more carbon, because depending on what they eat and how that's processed, you're also whales, in addition to storing a lot of carbon in their body, of course, are consuming a lot of phytoplankton. So the question is, what's going on right now when that phytoplankton is being consumed by other species or is going through other processes? But yeah, certainly this is an area that is of interest to many people.
Dr. Doney, when this has been discussed in the past, there always is a big but afterwards, and that is, what about the side effects? Do we know what will happen if we would undertake some of these things that the research looked at? I mean, and you're not advocating for this, from what I understand. These are just possibilities, but those side effects, what are some of the side effects? Do we know?
Yeah, in fact, there are side effects that are both environmental and social. So we're going to be affecting marine ecosystems, but also coastal communities and communities that depend upon their ocean for their resources, for their livelihood. One of the reasons why we wouldn't want to move right now into deployment is that in many cases, we don't fully understand how the ecosystem is going to be affected. So, for example, adding iron to the ocean, many studies, particularly in the Southern Ocean around the Antarctic, have shown that if you add iron at a large enough scale, it will stimulate phytoplankton growth, and you'll get a bloom of phytoplankton. And that will remove carbon dioxide from the surface ocean. Those studies were done to understand the natural dynamics of the ocean and marine ecosystem. Potentially, those studies could be expanded into looking at this as a potential carbon dioxide removal, with the caveat that we know for this technique to work that we're going to have large intended changes on the environment. The technique only works because you're driving plankton blooms in places that didn't have plankton blooms before. So, how would that affect, for example, marine mammals or fisheries? Could you potentially generate harmful algal blooms? What happens when you use up nutrients in one part of the ocean? Does that have ramifications or repercussions downstream, in other places in the ocean? And so a big part of what we were trying to do in the study was to provide a framework so that research could move forward, but we would very carefully monitor the ocean to verify that Yes, indeed, these techniques do or do not take up carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Do they actually store that carbon dioxide for a long enough period of time, decades to centuries, to make this a policy relevant solution? What are the intended and unintended environmental impacts? Are there environmental surprises? And how would this affect the social dimensions? How would this affect coastal communities? What are people's perceptions of these approaches? And would they actually be viable from a governance, regulatory, and social perspective?
Well, you just brought up a good point because, I mean, obviously, this is not just an American issue. It is difficult to get nations around the world to agree to. I mean, Paris was maybe the best example of the world agreeing to some changes. But how do you get, say, an island nation that may have a more of a negative impact than the rest of the world?
Right. And this is where we need to have these discussions about research code of conduct, not just within the US, but internationally. There are formats for discussing this, both in terms of scientific communities, but also through, for example, international treaties. So as part of our report, we lay out in great detail what the current framework is. None of the international treaties were really designed with carbon dioxide removal in mind. There's the London Dumping Convention, which is really a treaty to try to prevent pollution. There are other treaties on biodiversity. And so we need to take a careful look at these governance and regulatory issues and really bring in stakeholders from the beginning of the process, not as an afterfact, as an afterthought after the research has been designed.
Just
I
as
was just going to say
go ahead.
this needs to be done at the international level, but it also needs to be done at the domestic level. There are, state laws. We need to engage tribal nations, Indian nations as well. The indigenous and Native American communities. What we don't want to do is generate a larger problem by trying to mitigate climate that then might, damage a community's ability to harvest fishery resources, for example.
We only have about 3 minutes left. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. This is so interesting. Would this be changing weather or changing climate?
So it's really looking at the long-term buildup of these heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere. So as the climate changes, it does change weather events. There's a lot of discussion, about the role of climate change in extreme events, hurricanes, tornadoes, ice storms, droughts. We're really looking at a slow and gradual removal of carbon from the atmosphere to try to limit that long-term climate change, but it does have more immediate impacts, such as these extreme weather events.
Now, is this something that, if it were to be undertaken, would it have to be done on an ongoing basis? I mean, would it be something that we'd have to set out plans for? Okay, this is when iron would have to be added to the ocean, or, if we use that as just an example.
Yes, some of these, it depends on the technique. For example, the ecosystem recovery, we wouldn't want to go back to overfishing or whaling. If there is a benefit there, if we were reverse course, that would not be positive. For the iron fertilization, yes, because can be a relatively temporary effect, particularly if the carbon doesn't sink into the deep sea. Some of the more geochemical techniques, the alkalinity that you add wouldn't be removed for many centuries or even longer. And in fact, on really long time scales, the ocean's going to be the sink for most of the human carbon dioxide emissions because the ocean has a large volume, and a lot of this will be eventually, on thousands of years and longer, will be deposited as carbon sediments in the deep sea. but we can't wait that long. So what could we do to accelerate that process?
Something just to remind our listeners about quickly, we have experienced here in our region the blooming of algae in the Chesapeake Bay from fertilizers going down the Susquehanna River. And so, you know, when you were talking about side effects, Dr. Scott Doney, he is the inaugural Joe D. and Helen J. Kington Professor in Environmental Change at the University of Virginia. Dr. Doney, thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much.